This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, a major hospital company allegedly dumped a patient on L.A. Skid Row, and who's really profiting from the new O.J. Simpson book and TV special? We've got Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, and in our New York bureau, Bob Meadows, writer for People magazine. Plus, from the studios at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Callie Crossley, social cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. So, guys, I'm just going to move right ahead and start with a topic that's on a lot of people's minds. And O.J. Simpson, new book titled If I Did It. Now, Judith Regan, who's this sort of bonzo New York-based publisher, she's the one who signed him to this $3.5 million deal. Fox is airing this special with the two of them talking. But I want to frame things around a book that Catherine Russell Brown, an academic, wrote about Black support of the O.J. Simpson case. Let's take a listen.
For African Americans, in some ways, it doesn't even matter what the larger society thinks about their response to particular criminal justice cases. For many Blacks, they're one or two degrees of separation away from someone who's involved in the justice system. The perception, the reality of the criminal justice system is something different than for white Americans compared with Black Americans. But you're right, there was this sense that Blacks are just defending O.J. because he's Black, but I would maintain it had everything to do with a different take on the criminal justice system.
Again, that was Catherine Russell Brown, who appeared on our air. That's her from our own air. You know, Callie, one of the key questions that I think things come down to here is, first of all, are African Americans going to be reliving a kind of collective stigmatization? Oh, you're the ones that supported O.J. Simpson, and look what he's gone off and done now. And secondly, was African American support of the O.J. Simpson verdict about the verdict or about the man?
It was about the verdict, just to start there. And she's right, the academic that we just heard from, that Black people have a very different view about the justice system. And we, all of us, know some folks who are involved, and we also know some injustices along the way. So it's difficult to look at it in the same sort of, if you will, Black and white terms that most white Americans view the system. They come to it believing it's fair, it's just, and, you know, people I know who have been involved in it have been served well. So there's that. Now, the other part of it, though, is I just wonder if the poll is taken now where Black folks, where most Black Americans would stand. I mean, first of all, I was never one that believed that I wasn't the jumping up and down kind. I think the guy's guilty. But be that as it may, I had many heated discussions about it at the time with many folks who felt that sincerely outside of the justice system, he really was innocent, blah, 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 blah. I don't know if that's the case now, though I've just seen some video where, you know, he's traveling around the country and people think he's a hero. I just find that appalling and shocking. And I'm at the point now where they've gotten me agreeing with Bill O'Reilly, who says, don't watch this mess that's coming up on Fox television. This is ridiculous for us to continue to support it in this way. And I think Black folks have to stand up and say, OK, yeah, justice system is flawed, but this O.J. Simpson thing, that's a different animal.
Michael, is at this point, should Black people even feel any sense of either collective agreement with the verdict that happened years ago or collective shame? Or should we just say, you know what, he's not our problem. He may be Black, but he's not our problem.
Well, the shame belongs to O.J. Simpson. The shame belongs to those people who, despite the facts, despite the overwhelming evidence, continue to identify with racial rhetoric and racial idiocy. And that includes O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson was never identified with the Black community, but aside from that, he had a Here's Johnny legal defense, high-powered legal defense team. It wasn't about race at all. It seemed to me, with respect to the O.J. Simpson trial and the O.J. Simpson verdict, although I'm an African-American, call me white. The real problem was it was an incompetent prosecution and an incompetent judge and a high-powered legal team. And Johnny did his thing. Nobody was more surprised. If you look at the videotape, let's go to the videotape. Nobody was more surprised with that verdict than O.J. Simpson's attorney, Johnny, and O.J. Simpson. And for him to now come years later with this book, If I Did It, after a civil judgment that says, yeah, you did. You know you did it. The man is shameless. He has no shame. he should hide his head in shame. But it's not African-Americans who should hide their head in shame, because African-Americans were not on trial. It was O.J. Simpson was in trial.
Bob, you work for People magazine, which does everything from, issues-based reporting to celebrity-based reporting. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are coming down hard on Fox for airing this. If it were a situation where you had to make a decision whether or not, say, People magazine was going to run an exclusive from OJ, would you do it at this point, or would you consider it too shameful, too taboo, too crass, any of those things?
If it was my, well, since I won't be watching this special, I guess I have to say if it was my decision, I probably would veer away from something like this, because O.J. Simpson won't sell. He is the most reviled man in this country. The readership of People magazine is largely made up of white people. They wouldn't buy our magazine probably if they knew that this story was in there. I don't think this is going to be a big seller for Judith Regan. I don't think this is going to be a widely watched program for Fox. I really don't understand why they're doing it. I know OJ's doing it for the money. I know Judith is doing it for the notoriety.
Well, it sweeps weeks in television, so presumably they think this is going to be.
They think it will, but it's not going to be. It's just going to be something that's going to be talked about, but probably much like Snakes on a Plane, not garner much of an audience.
I don't understand how O.J. Simpson could be doing it for the money when given the huge size of that civil judgment against him, and I don't know how Judith Regan is going to hide the money from people who are going to go after it, or how O.J. Simpson has already hit the money, the $3.5 million deal. So that he owes the Goldmans a lot of money. It's time for him to pay up. With respect to Judith Regan, going into her own interview, she's got her own issues and involving
and
men.
Many of them.
Many of them.
She wrote this 8-page letter.
Did you call her a bonzo or a bozo?
I called her bonzo.
Oh, I thought you said bozo.
I didn't call her bozo. If you want to call her bozo, that's all on you. Well, I actually want to move ahead to another topic. We have a lot on our plate today. I went to Skid Row. I mean, this was a piece that I did with one of our producers, Corey Turner, and we did a two-part piece or series on Skid Row in Los Angeles, and it was shortly after a woman who had dementia was dumped just wearing her hospital gown downtown in, a very rough, dangerous area. And now Los Angeles prosecutors have filed criminal charges against Kaiser Permanente, who they alleged did the dumping, and I believe Kaiser has said, we apologize and we're looking into it. It's really amazing to me how much I learned about how different municipalities, like smaller cities around Los Angeles, will just use LA's downtown Skid Row as a place to dump prisoners. They drop them off with a paper bag full of, their soap and a couple of dollars they've earned. And what responsibility, I guess, do larger structures like a hospital system like Kaiser or other police departments have to really not view urban areas as a dumping ground? I guess, Callie, I'll start with you.
Well, they have the ultimate responsibility, which is, they're in the service of caring for people, hospitals particularly. I mean, there are oaths there that people take. There's responsibility, there's rules, there's laws. So this shouldn't be happening on any level, and certainly on a human level. But the fact that it's going on is, I guess, can't be that shocking. I'm looking at the fact that when we decided in this country, and I say we because there were lots of policymakers involved in this, that we were not going to fund services to mental health services in the way that we should, lots of those folks ended up on the streets. So, in effect, they were dumped as well. Maybe they didn't come from the doors of a hospital, as sometimes they did, but there they were. And so we're dumping not just in the Skid Rows of L.A., but we're dumping in communities across this country. And by the way, it's not just urban communities. It's happening in small rural communities as well. So we got a problem about dealing with the quote-unquote unwashed and unwanted. And I think it comes home to haunt us. And I hope that this is an example that would wake up folks, and because it could be your relative.
Bob, at this point in time, there are certain areas that are considered okay to dump people and certain areas that are not. Does this mean that we're going to have a larger discussion about the not in my backyard syndrome? Because if you dispersed all the people on Skid Row, they would have to go somewhere, often back to cities and towns where they were that dumped them there.
You know, I remember back in the mid-90s when Giuliani came in, and I had left New York around 95 or so, and I came back in 98. And when I came back, you know, Giuliani had been in power for about 5 years by that point. I was wondering, where have all the homeless people gone? Well, then I took a trip to Seattle. And I think they all ended up there because you move people around. If you enforce laws or like make it real difficult for people, they're just going, like you said, they're going to move someplace else. They're not going to just disappear all of a sudden, not become homeless. There are many, many issues that need to be addressed with this, whether it's mental health, whether it's AIDS, whether it's poverty just in general, that have to be addressed with this. So yeah, the discussion needs to be wider than just, well, we're dumping people here in Los Angeles, because that's not really going to solve the problem by itself.
Michael, you're executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. To what degree are issues like homelessness and mental health and all that, do these fall under civil rights concerns?
Well, they fall under human rights concerns, because a civilized society doesn't maltreat its citizens. It doesn't maltreat, doesn't disrespect, doesn't punish, doesn't abandon, doesn't desert. It does not dump its elderly, its sick, its poor on the skid row. Not a civilized society. Skid row is the blight and the shame of a quite prosperous nation, probably the most prosperous nation in the world. That patients suffering from dementia, of all kinds of diseases, dementia, that they could be dumped, abandoned, consigned to Skid Row is, to me, tantamount to administering a death penalty. If true, there is criminal and civil liability. But as senior citizens might say, those responsible for such a depraved indifference to life should not just be put in jail, they should be put underneath the jail. But society has got to do something about poverty. It has to do something about homelessness, other than sweep the homeless away, other than put the homeless out of public spaces and public places. And we've got to do something about homelessness. As Bob says, we've got to do something about mental health issues. We have to do something about health issues and health maintenance and insurance. And we got to build affordable housing. And for those people who can't live on their own, there have to be group homes and group housing so that they will have social services. But we have to stop declaring a war on the poor and renew our war on poverty.
All right. Well, want to move along to one last topic. The Bush administration appointed a chief of family planning programs. His name is Eric Kerouac, and he worked at an organization that believed that distributing contraceptives was, quote, demeaning to women, unquote. Now, there's a whole statute in federal policy that says that the government has to provide family planning services for low-income people. But is this appointment consistent with that mandate? Callie?
Of course not. This is just crazy. I really hope it's been done. His appointment has been done in this sort of twilight period before the Democrats take over certain key committee positions. So I hope this is something that they can address right away, because it's already difficult for a lot of women to come to grips with understanding that the importance of birth control, and particularly we're talking about teenagers, and just getting access to any kind of health care, and this is the most basic for women. And so for a man, by the way, to say to women that it's demeaning to them to seek birth control is just disgusting. That's the only way I can phrase it. Talk about a death sentence. I mean, we need to have good birth control, good family planning in this country so that we don't have unwanted children and so that people can take care of themselves. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Michael, you know, I think that this administration, the Bush administration, has often challenged abortion, but this is contraception. This is pre-pregnancy. Does this show kind of a creeping ideological tilt in terms of how these issues are dealt with? And I think in some ways that does relate to the whole topic we've been talking about, the topic of what do you do with extreme poverty, because birth control has been linked to diminishing extreme poverty.
Well, don't ask these ideological evangelicals to be consistent, but they are just that, ideological evangelicals. The Bush appointees are shocking with respect to the court, respect to the United States Commission on Civil Rights, for example. He's placed ideologues on that panel. He has a chair of the United States Commission on Civil Rights who assailed remedies to discrimination all the time. They assail affirmative action. They assail busing. They assail all the court-approved remedies to discrimination. And they're supposed to be in the business of monitoring civil rights enforcement. This is the same situation. This is a person who is supposed to be in charge of contraception and monitoring it and being the big, quote-unquote, guy. But it's obviously a guy who's never had to carry a baby or had to make a decision about an unwanted pregnancy. But aside from this personal inability of his on his part, he's obviously unable to understand the basic notions of justice and privacy and health care, and that a woman's right to choose and to control her own body with the attention of medical care is her decision, not his. Who cares about his opinion?
We're going to have to go to Bob. So
can I go ahead?
Yeah, briefly. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say one thing. I went to a Women's Concern website. And I have to say, there was really nothing on there that I found particularly reprehensible or even at all. It was very informative. It talked about condoms. It talked about proper usage. It talked about safer sex. It talked about abortion. And so it did give this type of information that is there. But the thing that I hope is that with Eric Kerouac coming in is that, as we all know, teenage pregnancy has dropped dramatically since 1991 across the board. My hope is that we can keep that momentum going. Yeah, preach abstinence. Yeah, preach contraception, preach safer sex, all those types of things. We all need all of that stuff together to keep that momentum going, and that's what I hope Kerouac does.
Well, all he right. can preach abstinence all he wants, but it ain't going to happen.
He can still preach it, Mike.
He can abstain himself.
Okay, guys, on that note,
yeah.
we've been talking to Bob Meadows of People Magazine, Callie Crossley, social cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press, and Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.